66.
Quiet, please. Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. If you thought that Minneapolis was the only place where Somali refugees are scamming hundreds of millions of dollars of American taxpayer money, think again. I'm going to tell you about the latest place where an investigation by a journalism organization, not mine, but a good one, has looked at the numbers hard, and they say the numbers simply don't add up, and it is Washington State. But let me dig into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. If you want to join what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. If you happen to be a naysayer, we always put naysayers to the head of the line. You can get into that line very, very easily, and we love hearing the counter arguments, and it's going to be interesting to hear yours. Our poll on X today: should the U.S. pull back from NATO if our so-called NATO allies, you know, the ones who spent decades not paying their fair share for defense and instead just simply assuming that the United States would pick up the ball when necessary, if our NATO allies refuse to help secure the Strait of Hormuz in the middle of the dispute with Iran, if they're not going to show up and do their job, do you think maybe the United States should pull back from NATO? Donald Trump is already telegraphing he may do exactly that. Anyway, you can find the X poll at Lars Larson Show on X. You can also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me talk about these Somali-run daycare centers. I mean, the last 6 months or so have been all about what is going on in Minneapolis and in Minnesota, because Somali refugees were a gigantic piece of the fraud that was going on in that state that sucked up tens of billions of dollars. No exaggeration, tens of billions of dollars. So I was fascinated when I saw that National Review was going to take a hard look into the daycare programs that are being run in Washington State. And they found that, as they put it, Somalis are vastly overrepresented in child care services relative to their share of the population, which, by the way, in case you're wondering what it is, about one half of 1% of the state of Washington is made up of Somalis. And yet they are a gigantic piece of the daycare business. Only it seems as though government is pumping millions and millions of dollars into daycares that don't appear to have any kids in them. So I'm going to dig into the details of this. Washington State is home to some of the largest Somali communities on the West Coast, about 15,000 residents of Somali descent. They represent a fraction of Minnesota's 76,000, more than 60,000 more in the state of Minnesota, which is why a lot of the initial focus was on the state of Minnesota. Now, there are about 8 million people in the state of Washington. Individuals of Somali ancestry number about 0.25% of the state population. But when it comes to child care services, the nonprofit Child Care Aware, quoted by National Review, says almost 7% of all child care providers list Somali as the primary language that is spoken in the daycare. As you might imagine, parents want to put their kids in a daycare in which the language the child speaks is also the language of the daycare. So what happens? Shows that 249 of the state's almost 7,000 child care providers list their primary language as Somali, about 20 times the number that if the Somali population was representative of what Somali daycare would be, it would be about 1/20th as many daycares operated by Somalis. So how has that worked out? Well, as National Review's investigation shows, a year of full-time care for four children would bring in about $33,000. Watching a dozen kids could bring in almost $100,000. And yet, There is an organization called Kismaya Family Child Care, one of the examples they chose. They are licensed to care for 9 kids, except they got checks from the state government of $750,000. So in other words, the same kind of picture that we saw going on in Minneapolis, where there didn't appear to be very many kids at a daycare or anybody being cared for, but an awful lot of public money was flowing in. Now, the total amount spent on Child Care and Development Fund over the past 4 years, $416 million. So in other words, a very rich territory when it comes to fraud. And the current president of an organization called the Supportive Child Care Provider Alliance, which used to be called the Somali Child Care Provider Alliance, but they've recently changed their name, and I'll bet you can figure out why, is a daycare owner herself. Her Mabsud Daycare, which is licensed for 12 kids and whose phone number does not accept phone calls, they got about $450,000 in state funding last year for 12 kids. That's about $40,000. That's about $40,000 per child. Now, not only is the Washington State Attorney General not going out and looking into this, journalism organizations are, and I've talked about some of the journalists who've looked into it. No, they're looking into it, but Nick Brown, the Attorney General of the state, he's not only not going out and looking for those scams, he is now threatening anybody who takes a hard look at Somali daycares with charging them with hate crimes. He says, if you go out and make unsubstantiated claims of fraud targeting daycares run by Somalis, he said, if you show up on somebody's front porch, that's not an investigation. They might actually prosecute that as illegal threatening or harassing behavior. In fact, he's encouraged anybody who has a journalist show up and start asking questions to contact law enforcement or call up the state's hate crimes and bias incident hotline. And a day before being sworn in as the new mayor of Seattle, Katie Wilson said she expressed solidarity with Somali child care workers by condemning what she called extremist influencers who go out and take videos. Let me tell you why that's a problem. Because if you see a legitimate purpose to either state or federal government funding daycare, funding childcare, funding other kinds of public services, every dollar that gets stolen from fraud or by fraud ends up being a dollar you can't actually spend on the thing that you're trying to solve. So even if you think these programs are completely legitimate, if they have illegitimate organizations who are sucking up money and stealing it from the system, they are stealing from the very people that you allegedly want to help. And that makes absolutely no sense at all. In any case, glad to be with you and always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. As we said, naysayers always go to the head of the line on this program. Glad to have them. You can send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can always cast a vote in our X poll. You'll find the X poll every day at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. Coming up, a few thoughts on the resignation of Joe Kent. Joe Kent is a man who's been on this program many, many times, but right now he's not answering our phone calls because he just resigned and said he can't stand the war in Iran. Hey, let's...
Disagree with Lars? Great. Naysayers go first at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
That Great Moment Every Day, where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Boy, has former Green Beret Joe Kent turned into a gigantic disappointment. Early this morning, I learned that Kent had resigned from his job as head of America's National Counterterrorism Center. The reason Kent gave is his opposition to President Trump's military strikes against Iran. I supported Kent's two unsuccessful runs for the United States Congress. He lost to Marie Perez. He would have been my member of Congress in Washington State's 3rd Congressional District, so I voted for him twice. When he got the job heading up the Counterterrorism Center, I figured he was a perfect fit. Longtime Green Beret was married to a woman who lost her life to an ISIS terrorist attack. Now, consider what Joe Kent just posted on social media today in his resignation letter directed to President Trump. Quote, Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation. Excuse me? Iran has been planet Earth's biggest state sponsor of terrorism for 50 years. They pursued nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles. They funded terrorists like Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis that have killed Americans. Even if they never got the technology to actually deliver a nuke to the United States, any nuclear-armed Iran could set off an exchange that would bring about essentially the end of the world. Not only that, but Joe Kent decides to resign right after three Islam and Iran-related domestic terror attacks on American soil in Texas, Michigan, and at Old Dominion University. And Kent has resigned the counterterrorism rule, even as the Democrat Party continues its jihad against funding Homeland Security. Come to think of it, maybe we're better off without Joe Kent in that job. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. My favorite ex-post of the day, Michael Tracy put this up a short time ago. Joe Kent blamed the October 7th attack on Joe Biden's insufficiently hostile policy toward Iran. I could read you the letter. Joe Kent posted it after the October 7th attack. He attacked his Democrat opponent for failing to punish anti-Semitism and pledged that if elected, he would make sure to generously arm Israel. Now, he blames Israel for corrupting U.S. foreign policy. In fact, in that letter that Joe Kent wrote, he says, America didn't go to war with Iran. Israel made us go to war with Iran. I don't think that's true. And in a related email, Jim writes, and Lars, it sure looks like the beloved Joe Kent has showed us his true colors. Would love to have him come on your show and explain himself. He had no problem coming on your show when he's running for office in Washington. Let's see if he has the stones to come on and talk to you now. I hope he does, but I'm not going to hold my breath. Thanks for your time. By the way, Jim, I sent out, as soon as I saw the news about Joe Kent, which was about 7 o'clock this morning, I immediately sent a text to Joe Kent. I have not received a reply. I immediately made a phone call to his cell phone. I have not received a reply. We have sent emails to Joe Kent. So far, we have not heard back. If I got ghosted by Joe Kent, I wouldn't be surprised. He was on this show literally dozens of times in the two runs he made against Marie Glusenkamp-Perez. If he decides not to show up this time, if he's going to run for office again, he may find himself not welcome back on this program. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
Well, for all the reasons I've already cited, I want to give today's Daily Grill, and it pains me to do it, I want to give it to Joe Kent. Joe Kent decides to quit in the middle of a war. A short war, but a war all the same. Joe Kent decides to quit as America is seeing domestic terror attacks on the ground, three of them in the last 10 days. Joe Kent quits in the middle of a political fight where the Democrats have decided to deliberately defund Homeland Security and TSA. Shame on you, Joe. I'm sorry you made the decision to go that direction, and I have no idea why you flipped so hard. I mean, at one point you're blaming the October 7th attack because Joe Biden wasn't tough enough, and now Donald Trump is too tough. I guess you've become Goldilocks in that case. Our best email of the day can always be found at talk@LarsLarson.com. Evan writes in, Lars, I think that Iran, Russia, China, North Korea, etc. Pose a threat to us. America is now on an island. It's not a matter of threats, which are real, but how do you address them? With a 30% increase in the price of gas, 40% increase in the price of diesel, guaranteed inflation it will produce, you think the American public is going to be worried about a perceived threat. If you want the Democrats back in control of everything, you couldn't have concocted a more foolish plan than this insane attack on Iran. Signed, Evan Miller. Yes, I get emails, and some of them are naysayer emails as well. Let me go to your calls. Let's start with John. Hey, John, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
You never saw this coming with Joe, huh? Do you think...
Not based on his statements of just 2 years ago, no. But he's changed.
You don't think he took the Tucker buyout, did he?
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because he's been spending a lot of time with Tucker Carlson, and his entire outlook seems to have changed dramatically, hasn't it?
You know, Wyden took a nasty swipe at him this morning, so he's not going to get any friendliness from the Democrats.
No, probably not, and I appreciate you making that point, because I don't know. I honestly don't know why Joe Kent has changed so dramatically, but if he's ever willing to come on the show, I'd be glad to ask him. Let's go to Ernest. Hey, Ernest, what's on your mind?
Yes, how are you today, Lars? What I wanted to say is that Donald Trump, because everything this man does that is wrong, and I'm just, this is a statement, everything that this man does and say that is wrong, that he shouldn't do, somebody in the Republican Party, even you, will cover up or try to make it right when it's wrong. This man is going to get us into something that we're going to catch hell getting out of, because nobody is correcting this man when he does wrong things. Just like he would
okay,
do a
can
child,
you give me just else. Give me one example of a wrong thing, as you call it?
Well, the first thing is he exaggerates, just like when. When
you're worried about his exaggerations?
No, wait a minute now. Let me finish.
You're going to have to say it quick.
He exaggerates things, like he said, the minute they dropped those bombs on the nuclear facilities in Iran, he before they even had...
The Lars Larson Show. Every email. No, really. talk@LarsLarson.com. That's talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Well, an Oregon judge has just cleared the way for the Democrat Party to move a gas tax vote from where the citizens put it by their signatures on an initiative November of this year. They are going to allow the Democrats to move that vote to May. And the Democrats want to do that because they want a low turnout election, and they want that vote on the gas tax increase, or the tax increases to fund ODOT. They want that moved away from precious Tina Kotek, because they know the governor already has a tough road to hoe to get to reelection. So a judge said, okay, you can do it. A Representative Ed Deal, who's one of the prime sponsors of that initiative, joins me now. Representative Deal, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you, Lars.
So what do you make of the decision by Marion County Senior Judge David Leith to say, yep, you can move the vote from November to May?
Well, not happy to say the least. I completely disagree with it. This bill didn't just move the referendum date. It had to overwrite several statutes, compress timelines, and gave the legislature the ability to actually write the explanatory statement. So the Democrat leadership wrote the explanatory statement instead of a neutral party writing it. It is, to me, it's outrageous. When you have a referendum that has been approved with 250,000 signatures and validated for the November election, to have the legislature step in at this point, to me, it's egregious, and it goes against everything that the referendum process stands for.
Okay, so Representative Deal, is there any other alternative? You know, is there another way you can appeal this one, or is the court action on this pretty much the end of the road, and now you've got to go other directions to beat this?
So on the legal front, we have opted not to appeal this decision. However, we are investigating a federal lawsuit. In light of what was decided in the Mary Martin case, where she was awarded the ability to put her argument in the voter pamphlet without a fee and without signature requirements, but only her. But there are a lot of other people who were aggrieved, so we're looking at a federal suit on that front.
Okay, and then when it comes to May, Ed, I've been pointing out to people, if I went back and I looked this up myself just to make sure of the numbers. Typical turnout for an Oregon general election is 63 to 65%, two-thirds of the 3 million registered voters. And then in May, it's usually one-third, or about 1 million fewer. Isn't this exactly what the Democrats complain about, that somehow voters are going to be disenfranchised? Hasn't this just cut 1 million voices out of this decision?
It absolutely has. I think what will happen, though, Lars, is this is going to drive one of the largest primary voter turnouts in a long time for Oregon. So I'm confident about that. And the other thing is it's going to die, whether it's in May or November. These tax and fee increases will be defeated.
Okay, and then what happens, because the Democrats, including Tina Kotek, have hung their hat on the idea that they first fronted last summer. Give us more money, give us $15 billion or over 10 years, or we're going to have to cut ODOT. And then it was give us $7 or $8 billion, or we're going to have to cut ODOT. Then it was give us $4-plus billion, or we're going to have to cut ODOT. So when this thing goes down to defeat in May, what does the governor do at that point? Do they come back? Does she say, we're going to call you back into special session and have you pass another tax increase? I mean, where do they go with that? Or do they actually cut back in some of the fat in ODOT?
Well, they have to cut some fat, and they have to reprioritize. And we had time in the short session here to work on those issues and to get ODOT back on track. But instead, they were obsessed with getting the referendum moved. And the only reason to do that is because Governor Kotek doesn't want it on the same ballot as she's on in November. That is the only reason to move that thing, because they know those tax and fees are going to go down. Voters will not approve them. So we wasted a whole session where we could have been fixing ODOT issues and instead dealt with this political issue.
By the way, later on today, I'm going to talk to John Lee, who's a state rep from Washington State. Apparently, the two governors, Ferguson and Kotek, just said, we're going to recommit ourselves to the Interstate Bridge Project. Only they've got about $5 billion for the bridge itself, and it's going to cost more than $7.5 billion, and that's assuming it doesn't grow dramatically after they break ground, like almost every ODOT project does. Does ODOT have half of a couple of $1 billion more? Because I don't think Washington does either. So how can the two governors recommit themselves to a project they know they don't have the money to build?
I don't understand it either. This bridge has turned into a boondoggle. It's going to be over $10 billion. It's a double-decker boondoggle. I just don't even see the federal government even engaging with this, frankly. So, to me, they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars just designing and studying this, and it doesn't solve the basic elements of what a bridge should do, which we need to add a third lane in each direction. Let's at least do that. It doesn't even do that.
No, it doesn't. Representative Deal, is there anything else people need to know to understand where we're going from this point forward to May when the vote actually happens?
Well, I would like people to know that I've signed the Americans for Tax Reform tax no tax pledge. I think I'm the only gubernatorial candidate that's done that, but I'm committed to not raising taxes in Oregon, so I wanted to make that clear. We're also referring another piece of legislation to the voters, Lars. The Democrats led an effort to disconnect us from the federal tax code, which will be increasing Oregon's taxes by $300 million or so dollars every budget cycle. We are determined to refer that one as well, and let voters weigh in on that.
Now, how quickly can you get the signatures on that together? And the vote wouldn't be this year, would it?
Yes, the vote would be in November.
But so there will be a tax increase on the ballot. In other words, you can vote to get rid of what the legislature just did, keep the tax cuts from Donald Trump, or you can give Tina Kotek the tax increase she wants.
Exactly. And so we're going to refer that. It looks like the governor's dragging her feet on signing that bill as well, cutting our time down. But we're also working with Representative Mannix on a petition to kill the death tax. And also there's a vote before tolls petition. We want to support that one as well. So our No Tax Oregon machine is still alive and well, and we're making sure that people have a chance to weigh in and override some of the stuff that the legislature's been doing.
Ed, thank you very much. That's Representative Ed Deal. He's also running for governor of the state of Oregon. And Tina Kotek is running for re-election in a year when the unions have kicked her to the curb. And even the Working Party's family has said, no, we're not going to endorse Tina Kotek. And she's going to be sharing the ballot with at least one tax increase proposal. And that will be interesting, too. It's Tuesday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars Larson Show? Get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. This segment brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Our ex-poll question, should the U.S. pull back from NATO if the NATO allies refuse to help them secure the Strait of Hormuz? I'd answer that one yes. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. And it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. David Garcia writes, and Lars, I know Joe Kent has been a guest on your show several times. It'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about his resignation from the Trump administration. There is enough negative misinformation from the cartel media. The Trump administration does not need any negatives from its own party. I can't wait till Massey and Murkowski are gone, signed David Garcia. Well, we've invited Joe Kent to come on. And actually, somebody said, oh, Lars, you're going to turn your back on Joe Kent just because he will not support what Donald Trump has done. Well, when Joe Kent went to work for President Trump, he was asked to head up counterterrorism. This is an especially important time in counterterrorism. We've got a war in Iran for another short period of time is the messaging we're hearing from President Trump. It's not going to go on that long. In fact, even the energy secretary says he figures just a few more weeks of high gas prices and then they'll start going down. Now, I know some of you will say, I don't believe that. Okay, let's see what happens. But in the meantime, to have Joe Kent quit with what's going on in Iran, with three recent domestic terrorist attacks by Muslims or Iran-backed Muslim attacks in America in the last 10 days, and Joe Kent decides it's that time to quit as the head of the Counterterrorism Center. All I said was, Joe has been on this show dozens of times before when he was running for office, and he was glad for the free exposure on radio. We've now invited him to come back on. We need to get some answers to some of the questions that a lot of you and I have about why he's leaving and why he seems to have changed his tune. And he has. When he was running for Congress, he blamed the October 7th attack because Joe Biden did not stand up to Iran strongly enough. Now, Joe Kent is saying, I'm leaving because we didn't decide to get into this war. Israel made us get into this war. I'd like to ask him a few questions about that. If at this point he decides, no, I don't want radio time, well, we'll see how things go. But he may find himself unwelcome at that point to have taken advantage of getting on the radio when he was running for office and he wanted the free time, and then to say, when we want to ask you questions about why you decide to so publicly disparage what President Trump is doing, and that's what he did. He disparaged it. He said, we should not be in this war. We should not be attacking Iran. He literally said, Iran is not a threat to the United States. And I disagree with that altogether. Let's go to Chuck, who's a naysayer. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I recall all through Kent's, I'm a voter here in Southwest Washington, of course, and I paid attention to the campaigns both times he ran for Congress. And he seemed to be pretty consistent on the anti-war platform. He was not a. And this was interesting.
Hold on. Can I throw something at you that'll blow that one right out of the water, Chuck?
Well, not really, because he's.
You don't want to hear that info or what?
Well, sure, I guess.
Okay, here is a Joe Kent press release, October 7th, 2023. He sent it out after the attack in Israel that killed 1,200 people. And what he said was, when I get to Congress, he didn't vote, said, when I get to Congress, I will not authorize one red cent of financial aid to Iran or Hamas, and I will make sure that Israel gets the weaponry they need to keep themselves secure. He also says the reason October 7th happened was that Joe Biden was not being tough enough with Iran. So is that an anti-war position to you?
No, he's looking at using Israel as a proxy, pretty much.
Well, but he also says he thinks Joe Biden, he said, I am saddened and angered by the violent attacks against Israel. Hamas' unprecedented violence was made possible by the Biden administration providing the number one state sponsor of terrorism billions of dollars. Biden has consistently enabled Iran and its proxies. Marie Perez did not condemn Representative Jayapal when she labeled Israel a racist state. He wanted Joe Biden to be tougher against Iran, and he says because they weren't, October 7th happened. It does sound like you have to. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Yes. Well, this is another example of maybe he wasn't talking about being tough on Iran in the form of opening up a new war for the United States.
What other way is there to be tough on a terrorist sponsor like Iran? Do you send them a nasty note? Do you send them a strongly worded letter?
Exactly what Kent was talking about. Give Israel, just like we're giving Ukraine, the necessary equipment and people support when it's appropriate to do that to defend Israel.
But you don't think he meant at all that the United States should stand up to Iran as well? And what other way do you stand up?
They are doing that in a sense. Lars, they're doing that, but not directly. It's kind of like if we got involved directly in Ukraine, you know?
I understand that, but is that the limit of it? Is just arm up Israel and use them as a proxy? But you don't think he meant the United States?
I think Israel's a big boy now. I think that we should stop holding Israel's hand on a budget.
Oh, I think we should stop sending the money. They don't need our money anymore, and they buy their own weapon systems, but they need to stand up to Iran. Do you think Iran, with nuclear weapons, would be a threat to the United States?
Probably, but is nuclear, so is North Korea.
Well, hold on. Joe Biden says they are not a threat. And that's the pinch point on all of this.
How is it? Joe Biden?
No, Joe Kent, when he resigned today, said Iran is not a threat to the United States. Now, they were about to get nuclear weapons. They were right on the verge of it. Trump was told that. Do you know why Joe Kent was cut out of the presidential briefings the president gets every day? Because they thought that leaks were coming out.
Okay, well, maybe he sensed that, he being Mr. Kent, and he thought it was appropriate to exit left or exit right or whatever the hell. And
while declaring that Iran is not a threat to the United States, do you agree with that or not?
Right now, I don't think so.
You don't think Iran is a threat to the United States? Interesting. He shares Joe Biden or Joe Kent's point of view. Back in a moment. It's Tuesday, and it's the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
information you need when you want it. FM News 101 KXL is Portland's number one source for news and information. KXL FM, Portland, Vancouver, Salem.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Retired Green Beret combat veteran Joe Kent, President Trump's director of the National Counterterrorism Center, has resigned, saying he cannot, in good conscience, back the administration's war in Iran. CBS's Olivia Rinaldi.
He is one of the top, if not the top, counterterrorism official in the United States, who is now saying that the pretenses in which the war began were essentially staged by Israel, and there was pressure there for the U.S. to get into the war.
President Trump says that he always thought Kent was a nice guy, but weak on security. Israel says it has killed two senior Iranian leaders. This, as President Trump expresses frustration with NATO nations after they reject his call to help secure the Strait of Hormuz.
NATO's making a very foolish mistake.
President Trump commenting in the Oval Office during a visit from the Prime Minister of Ireland. The president described the relationship with NATO as one-sided.
I've long said that, you know, I wonder whether or not NATO would ever be there for us. So this was a great test, because we don't need them, but they should have been there.
Trump also said the U.S. has already obliterated Iran's Navy, Air Force, and other military infrastructure. At the same time, though, Iran has put explosive mines in the Strait of Hormuz, posing a threat to commercial shipping, including the oil trade. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, the White House.
Police in Georgia say they've responded to a shooting at a VA clinic. Jasper officials say on social media that officers located the suspected shooter and confronted the suspect, who was shot. A victim found at the scene was airlifted to a hospital. Attorney General Pam Bondi has been subpoenaed to testify before the House Oversight Committee by GOP Chairman James Comer. CBS's Jake Rosen.
In a letter subpoenaing Bondi, Comer wrote that, quote, as Attorney General, you are directly responsible for overseeing the department's collection, review, and determinations regarding the release of files pursuant to the Epstein Files Transparency Act, and the committee therefore believes that you possess valuable insight into these efforts. The committee voted on March 4th to approve a motion to subpoena Bondi, with five Republicans voting with all Democrats to move ahead on the matter.
Long lines at TSA lines are impacting airports, that is, around the country, as more agents call out due to missed paychecks amid the partial government shutdown.
In Atlanta, long lines wrapped through Hartsfield-Jackson Airport as TSA staffing shortages forced one of the security checkpoints to close. There are similar scenes at airports nationwide, just as 171 million passengers take to the skies for spring break. The security slowdown is forcing travelers to adjust.
Decided to come a little early, but I didn't come early enough. Didn't expect to be lines outside.
That's CBS's Bradley Blackburn reporting. Stocks are up on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
I want to know what's going on in the world.
I'm Tony.
There are big questions that all of us are asking. I want to get you the answers.
How are you?
I'm Tony DeCoppo. Join me on the CBS Evening News.
Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. Consider this. When it comes to reading in public school students, so those are kids kindergarten through 12th grade, Oregon ranks as one of the worst states in America. 3 out of 5 third graders are not proficient at reading. Now, when you have a 60% failure rate, you've got to ask, well, what's going on there? And the question, I'd never thought of asking it this way before. I've asked questions about education before. Do the teachers know how to teach kids how to read? And it is the question that was framed up by Jim Green, who is former director of the Oregon School Boards Association. Mr. Green, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on, Lars.
Seems like a kind of a basic question. I guess, wouldn't you assume that somebody who's gone to a four-year college and then taking classes in the School of Education and then went out and student taught that a man or woman who's gone through all that would know how to teach kids how to read. I mean, haven't human beings been teaching their kids how to read for thousands of years? It's not exactly reinventing the wheel. Do you think, is there evidence that there are teachers who don't know how to teach reading?
No, I don't think there's teachers who don't know how to teach reading. I think they were trained at their institutions of higher ed in a process that isn't research-based and doesn't actually work for most kids. We were told a long time ago that whole language acquisition was the way to teach reading. Well, all the research shows that is, in fact, not the case. You want to use what we call the science of reading, which is a phonetically based reading system, which you and I, Lars, were old enough. We were probably taught that way with our parents to sound out the words. The letters sound like this.
I was, and it's what I do with my granddaughter. I say, sound the word out. She'll say, and
that's what I do with my grandkids too.
She gets tired of me saying it, but she knows that's the way to tackle any kind of word. It's the thing I have to do on words I haven't used before.
And the training that teachers were getting, so I don't blame the teachers. I think teachers do a wonderful job. I think they've got a very hard job. But if they weren't trained to teach kids in the way that we now know through research that works with kids, then there's something wrong with the system at the higher education level where those teachers are getting those certificates and graduating from college. And one of the things I said in the article, I don't think it's the only thing. I think it's one thing you could do is say to teachers, hey, take this test to show you know how to teach reading. I think the other thing you could do, the Teachers Standards and Practices Commission, TSPC, the agency in the state that licenses our teachers, you could say to them and say, okay, if you want to be an approved teacher education program in the state of Oregon, this is how you have to instruct your students on how to read. And TSPC is a state agency. The governor appoints those board members. They're approved by the Senate. I said use an executive order. Not a big fan of executive orders, Lars. I kind of like to have the debate at the agency through administrative rules or at the legislature. But I got to tell you, this is an urgent issue. As you said, we have only a 40% of our students in third grade know how to read at a third grade level. We need to get on this, and the governor needs to act with urgency to address this issue to get those kids ready to read at the end of the third grade. Everything we know says that being able to read at the third grade level, at the end of third grade, is the level at what you succeed at going forward in your academic career. It's that important. It's that basic. And we need to move with some urgency.
I'm talking to Jim Green, who's former director of the Oregon School Board Association. By the way, he's quoted at length in a piece by Mark Zussman's Oregon Journalism Project, and I give full credit to them. But I don't look, I've got the same attitude about executive orders. I don't think they're for everything. But when you need to act fast, and having a big, long debate in front of the Oregon legislature, which isn't exactly much to write home about. I mean, that bunch can't seem to figure anything out. I mean, remember, last summer, we saw them debating taxes all summer long and then having to be called back in a special session to craft something they knew the entire public hated with a passion. I wouldn't want to start a debate in front of them and say, now we're going to debate phonics versus whole language, and which I'm sure most of them don't have the first clue about. Jim, you're being very diplomatic, and I applaud you for that, but I don't think that's the way to go about it. You need to fix this for kids. Let me ask you about another idea that I've kicked up a few times because I've seen it work so well from a distance in Mississippi. They have a thing called the third grade gate. You get to the end of third grade and you're not ready for fourth grade, you get held back. Literally, does any student ever get held back in the Oregon school system today?
Well, I think they do. I mean, I think it's,
Do you know that for a fact, Jim?
I don't know that for a fact, but I know when I was in kindergarten, I got held back in kindergarten. Primarily,
yeah, but Jim, you and I are a lot older. I don't think anybody gets held back, right?
I don't think they do at a level that they should be. Now, there are going to be instances where kids have different circumstances that you could say, okay, we can move them on. But I don't disagree with you. I think that's one of the other things that they could look at in Oregon to say, hey, if you're not reading at the third grade level at the end of third grade, let's get some extra help for you. We've got the summer learning program. We got the early learning initiative. And then people will always say, Lars, now wait a second. We don't have the money for all this. Well, I'd argue we do. I know you didn't like it. I know a lot of your listeners didn't like it. But in 2019, we passed the corporate activity tax as part of the Student Success Act. Those dollars are supposed to go to programs like this to improve student outcomes.
Well, Jim, so, let me ask you, have they gone to such programs?
I think they have. They've worked at least in some small measure to a summer learning program. There's been some money allocated for summer learning because, you know, they always talk about the summer learning drop-off for kids. And the governor has put forward an early learning initiative. But the issue that's going to come up is districts are going to say, wait, we don't have that curriculum. And curriculum costs a lot of money. Okay, well, the state has the money. And teachers will need to be retrained. So they'll
Hold on. They have to buy new curriculum? They already have the curriculum, don't they?
Well, they may not have curriculum that's specific to, like, science of reading and teaching it in that manner, Lars, is what I'm saying. So if the argument is we don't have the money, I'd argue, yeah, you do. That's what we did. Now, I know, Lars, you didn't like it. A lot of people didn't like it. We got it through the legislature.
It killed some businesses.
We could debate everything about that bill, Lars. But I think they've got the money to do the program.
Well, let me tell you why I think. Do you know why I opposed it, Jim? We now spend in the state of Oregon, state of Washington, some of the highest amounts per student per year in America and get the worst results in America. Now, when you're paying the maximum amount in America and getting the crap results, is there a good reason to say you don't need more of our money? You need to spend it differently. You think that's unreasonable?
I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't disagree with you. My point was the money's there. And we need to move with urgency in this issue because, like you said, if we wait for a debate at the legislature, or we wait for a debate at an administrative agency through a rule writing process, it can take a year and a half, 2 years.
Exactly. That is Jim Green. Jim is the former director of the Oregon School Boards Association. Credit to the Oregon Journalism Project. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Peace. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Well, I read his statement. I always thought he was a nice guy, but I always thought he was weak on security, very weak
that
on security.
That is President Donald Trump, who is speaking this morning after the news broke that Joe Kent, who is a former military man, he was in the Green Berets, he was in Special Forces, and he decided to take the job as the head of the National Counterterrorism Association, the National Counterterrorism Agency. So he worked under Tulsi Gabbard. And he came out today and announced, or late last night, that he was quitting that job. And he said he was quitting it for a couple of reasons. Number one, that he couldn't take the fact that the United States was attacking Iran. In my way of thinking, we're attacking Iran to neutralize a threat, which is what national security is all about. You make sure you either neutralize a threat or you can counter that threat in some way. But he also said it wasn't the United States that decided to go to war, that Israel decided that we would go to war. And that's an allegation I think that Donald Trump would reject wholesale. He also said that he does not think that Iran was a threat to national security. Well, virtually every single president from both parties has viewed Iran as a threat to national security. I mean, that's a country that for almost 50 years, every single week has said death to America, death to Israel. And when they began to develop nuclear weapons, a problem that was not confronted very well by Barack Hussein Obama, was not confronted at all by Joe Biden. And Donald Trump was the one who said, you're not going to get those weapons. And Iran said, yes, we are. So Joe Kent didn't see Iran as a threat to the United States. Now, we've invited Joe Kent to come on this program. He was on this program any number of times, dozens of times, when he was running for the U.S. Congress, and he was always glad to come on. At this point, he's not returning our phone calls. He's not returning my text messages. He's not returning our emails, but he's welcome to come on the program. And then House Speaker Mike Johnson was asked about the resignation of counterterrorism chief Joe Kent.
I'm on the Gang of Eight. I got all the briefings. We all understood there was clearly an imminent threat, that Iran was very close to the enrichment of nuclear capability, and they were building missiles at a pace that no one in the region could keep up with.
Yeah, and on top of that, there's an interesting little detail. And that is that Joe Kent had been part of the presidential intelligence briefings months ago, until a few months ago when he was cut out of those briefings. That was at a time when the White House was concerned that leaks were coming out of the president's intelligence briefings, and Joe Kent, for whatever reason, was cut out of those intelligence briefings. It's one of the things I would ask Joe Kent about if and when he decides to come on the show, because as I said, this show has been very friendly to Joe Kent. We helped support his first run for Congress. He ran against Marie Perez and he lost. He then ran a second time against Marie Perez, and he lost the second time. And he was always welcome on the program. He is still welcome on the program. But I would ask him, were you part of the president's intelligence briefings? And were you cut out of those briefings a few months ago? And why were you cut out of those briefings a few months ago? But if Joe Kent says Iran was not a danger, House Speaker Mike Johnson suggests maybe it's because he didn't have the information we had.
Iran was building up ballistic missiles at such a rapid pace, and we knew that their plan was to fire them upon Americans. The commander-in-chief and his administration had a very difficult decision to make. I don't know where Joe Kent is getting his information, but he wasn't in those briefings, clearly, because the Secretary of State, the Secretary of War, and everyone, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Kane, they had exquisite intelligence, and we understood that this was a serious moment for us. Had the president waited, I am personally convinced that we would have mass casualties of Americans, service members and others, and our installations would have been dramatically damaged.
That is House Speaker Mike Johnson. Now, here's where it gets even more interesting than that, because Joe Kent has done a couple of things. Number one, at the time of the October 7th attacks on Israel, he came out and he blamed those attacks on Joe Biden not standing up to Iran enough, number one. And number two, saying that if he got into the U.S. Congress, he would make sure that Israel was very, very well armed. Now he's blaming Israel for getting America into the attacks on Iran. It's also interesting to go back just to January of 2024. So remember, that was an election year. Donald Trump would be elected in November. Kamala Harris would be defeated in November. But in January of 24, Joe Biden came out and he said the reason we had American service members who were on the border between Syria and Jordan, the reason they died was that America was dangling those service members in front of the bad guys in the Middle East as bait.
Our troops have been attacked, we think, at least 150 times since the October 7th incident began. And so we've seen this coming. This was an inevitable conclusion. So by leaving our troops in these locations, undefended, essentially, we left them there as bait because so many people in Washington, D.C. want to go to war with Iran. There's no other logical conclusion other than the fact that we have left them there as bait to be killed by Iranians at the time and place of their choosing so that we can continue to escalate towards a conflict with Iran and us baiting a trap for ourselves to get our troops killed to encourage and then really to justify a further war against Iran.
Now that was Joe Kent 2 years ago, just over 2 years ago in January of 24. But then he agrees to take the job working for Donald Trump and head up the counterterrorism center. So he knows what he's going into. He knows that Donald Trump has been talking about Iran and the threat that it holds against the United States and has for 50 years. I mean, you can go back and find Donald Trump as a private citizen and then a Democrat talking about the kind of threat that Iran poses. And I don't think Donald Trump is very impressed by the fact that Joe Kent decided to just hang it up and walk out the door. Take a listen.
But when I read his statement, I realized that it's a good thing that he's out because he said that Iran was not a threat. Iran was a threat. Every country realized what a threat Iran was. The question is whether or not they wanted to do something about it. And many people, many of the greatest military scholars are saying for years that presidents should have taken out Iran because they wanted a nuclear weapon.
Yeah, and if they ever got that nuclear weapon, can you imagine how that would have changed the game? In other words, if Iran had been able to say to the rest of the world, don't you dare touch us. If you come after us, we have a nuclear weapon and we will use it. They wouldn't even have to use it against the United States directly. If they used it against our allies, if they used it against our bases in other countries, we would have no choice but to respond. Donald Trump decided to take that threat out. Joe Kent says there was no threat there to begin with, and we were just using our service members as bait. You got the Lars Larson Show.
Something to say but don't want to talk? Email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I can't tell you how many times over the last, I think, 30 years, I've had to explain to people illegal alien kids have a right to go to public schools, K through 12 schools in the United States. Now, do I like that? No, I don't like it. I think at one point it might have been viewed as a relatively minor problem. Now it sounds like more of a major problem, but it's because more than 40 years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court said that schools have to educate students regardless of their immigration status, but it is causing a major strain on classrooms and on taxpayers. And I thought we'd talk about that with Corey DeAngelis, who's a research fellow at Heritage, a senior fellow at Americans for Fair Treatment, and a visiting fellow at the American Institute for Economic Research, the author of The Parent Revolution. Corey, you wear almost as many hats as I do.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I'm glad to do it. Now, first of all, I have it right. The 82 Supreme Court said what about illegal alien kids going to school?
Well, it's absolutely ridiculous that this law, that this interpretation of the law is still on the books today. It's over a half a century year old. And a lot of people don't know about this, that the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision in a less conservative majority than they have today that states are required to pay for the education of illegal immigrants. And so education itself, the word, is not in the U.S. Constitution. It's not supposed to be a federal issue. It's a decision that's supposed to be left up to the individual states. So this was, you know, judicial overreach here, I would argue, from 1982 in this Plyler decision, forcing taxpayers to fund the education of illegal immigrants. It's totally insane. Most people don't believe it, but it is basically the law of the land today, according to their interpretation. And I'd say the current Supreme Court should take up a case. And there is some legislation going through different states right now that might force the issue to get them to reconsider it, including there's an example from Tennessee. Their House just passed a bill yesterday by a vote overwhelmingly 70-25 that would require public school districts to at least report how many illegals they have enrolled in their schools.
Yep.
And I'd say it should go a lot further. Their Senate has a better version. They voted out their version, 19-13 out of their Senate, which would additionally require or allow public school districts to refuse to enroll illegal immigrants. And if they want, they could also charge them tuition if they still want to attend their schools. They're going to have to figure out which version continues. I'd say they should go a step further and say, you know, the public school districts have an incentive to enroll more people and get more state tax dollars for doing so, whether the kids are illegal or not. So I'd say the state should pass a bill to make it totally illegal to force taxpayers to fund the education of illegals. We spend $20,000 a kid per year in America in the public school system.
Yep.
You do the quick math. That's $260,000 for a K-12 education. And our taxpayers are footing the bill. It's time to put a stop to it. It's a magnet. It creates an incentive for even more illegal immigration to happen. So we should put a stop to it.
Well, I agree with you, Corey, because that 82 decision is always stuck in my craw. But when people call and say, well, let's kick all the kids out of K-12 schools, I said, you can't. The Supreme Court decision is on the books. It's precedent setting for the whole country. But you're right. And maybe what Tennessee should do is pass the law. And when an illegal alien group, and there are plenty of groups in America that advocate for illegals, when they say, well, we're going to sue you, say, go ahead, sue. Yeah, we'll take it all the way to the Supremes, and they'll make the decision.
That's right, and it'll probably go at least 6-3 in our direction because education is not a federal issue. I mean, don't even get me started on the Department of Education.
Oh, my God.
It should have been. It should have never been created.
Trump's on his way to putting them out of business, isn't he?
He's working on it. You need Congress to totally rip the Band-Aid off, but he's fired thousands of people already. They're killing it from the inside, shipping off pieces from the department to other departments. So they're doing the best they can, but you have this thing called the filibuster in the Senate. You need 60 votes to totally erase
blow
the
that
department.
Thing up too.
But Corey, the thing is,
blow that thing up too.
Yeah, burn it to the ground and salt the earth. It should have never existed to begin with. But you know, at the end of the day, property taxpayers are being harmed as well with these illegal immigrants, not just the kids. I mean, the kids, this is taking away time and energy and resources from the kids who are here legally, and property taxpayers having to fund this expensive education for illegals. I mean, they're never going to get to fully own their own homes. I live in Texas, and the property taxes here are through the roof, and guess what? Like 90% of that money goes towards the school system. And so, you know, people who don't even have kids are having to fund the illegal immigrants and their education. And, you know, some liberals might come back and say, oh, well, you got to have compassion for the kids. And, you know, well, their parents shouldn't have brought them here in the first place.
That's
right. By the way, they're not even being educated. All they're just sitting there. It's a form of daycare. And so maybe you'd have an argument if they're all graduating at proficient levels, but you know what? They're not. And so they're just wasting everybody's time, and it's hurting the kids who are here legally. So
you know,
have
Corey,
compassion for the American citizens, too.
You know what I compare it to? I know people who said, we're going to go and rent a house in a really nice school district. And I say, why are you moving? They say, because we want our kids to go to a good school. Try signing your kid up for a school if you don't live in the district. They're going to tell you your kid can't go here. And
yeah.
You say, hold on. So an American family who shows up with an American kid that says, I want my kid to go to your school. It's a great school. They say, yes, it is a great school. You don't qualify because you don't live in the district. But an illegal alien kid can show up from El Salvador, and that same school district will say, come on down. You're welcome. So you've got unequal treatment of people in the country, don't you?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I should have included that in my article. I will going forward, that they have these boundaries and borders for American citizens that they cannot cross. And I live in San Antonio, Texas. And in fact, there's a district by mine that everybody wants to go to. It's called Alamo Heights School District.
Yeah.
And they charge kids tuition to cross the line to go. So, you know, you still pay property taxes for the school you're not using. And they charge $10,000 in tuition on top of that for the privilege of crossing lines. But if you're an illegal, apparently, they can't tell you no, and they can't charge you tuition. So this is a double standard here that I think should get more attention, where, look, at the end of the day, states need to be bold on this issue and push it so that the Supreme Court can overturn the flawed decision from half a century ago.
I mean, Corey, isn't that one of the things the Constitution does guarantee us is equal treatment under the law? And when illegal aliens get treated like first-class citizens and American citizens get treated like number two, I don't think that's equal treatment under the law. That's Corey DeAngelis from Heritage, Americans for Fair Treatment, and the American Institute for Economic Research. His book is called The Parent Revolution. I'll be right back.
When
On the go? Can't listen to Lars live? No problem. Get the podcast 24/7 at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Tuesday on the Radio Northwest Network, and it's a pleasure to be with you. You can call 866-HEY-LARS. If you're a naysayer, you go to the head of the line. You can send me an email, talk at LarsLarson.com, like Jim Jenkins, who wrote in, Lars, about Joe Kent. Joe Kent has at least betrayed President Trump. He could have simply left the counterterrorism agency, but he had to promote himself on the way out. There are plenty of mainstream media appearances in the future for someone like that. We'll see what he does next. He may try to run for Congress again as a Massey/Paul Republican using his newfound Trump resistor cred. That might actually work in Washington State. Now, let's go to a naysayer, and that's Steve. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about?
Oh, hey, Lars. Oh, the valor of the noncombatant, right? Here we go again. This is a decorated man. He was a Green Beret. I think he served 11 tours.
We've talked about all that on the show. We don't disagree about that, Steve. What do we disagree about?
He's got a backbone. He has integrity. He's not going to fall in line and be a yes man like everybody that Trump has surrounded by him. You don't think the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, he will never speak ill of Donald Trump or go against him or face the repercussions. I appreciate Joe Kent for what he's done, just like John McCain. I'm so tired of the president denigrating people who have served the country proudly, who has never even been in the Army. He has bones spurs.
Okay, but hold on a second, Steve. If you're going to disparage the 92% of the country that has never served and never will serve, I'd be careful about that. I honor the people who've served in the military just like you do. But let me ask you about what Joe Kent said. Joe Kent said Iran is not a threat to the United States. Is he right?
I think I have to qualify that. I'm 49 years old. My whole life, I've heard about Iran being a risk to America. What there's an adage in medicine. Why did you present to the hospital today? Why did you come to the emergency room now if you have been having issues for years? We've been hearing about Iran for 49 years, or 47.
We have. And Steve, that's the point Trump's been making over and over. He said all these other presidents knew that Iran was a threat. They acknowledged it. They called him the biggest sponsor of terrorism. They knew they were on a path to get nuclear weapons. I'm the first president who will actually do something about it. So to your point about backbone, if Trump says they are now a threat, and we know that from the briefings we're getting, that they are this close to getting a weapon, and once they have a nuclear weapon available to them, then they are a gigantically bigger threat than they are, than they are today. So I'm asking you, it's a yes or no. Either they are a threat to the United States and the security of our country, or they're not. Is it a yes or a no?
You can't just do this yes, no, black, white.
Yeah,
no,
I have to, because, hold on, let me tell you why I have to, Steve. Steve, this is why I have to. If Joe Kent says they are not a threat, and there was no reason to attack them militarily, Donald Trump says they are a threat, and he knows the presidential briefings that Joe Kent was cut out of for some reason. He was excluded from the POTUS briefing. So, either they are a threat, and you need to go neutralize the threat, or they're not a threat. It is a yes-no question.
Lars, you're wanting Joe Kent to do what you wish the Democrats in power during the COVID pandemic. Once they got new data, don't double down, pivot. Don't keep...
No, I'm not pivoting. I'm asking you, either they were a threat and Trump was justified, or they weren't a threat and Joe Kent is right. Which one is, and why won't you give me an opinion? They either were a threat or they weren't.
Opinion, but I can't be boxed into yes or no. They're a theoretical threat, and they have been for 47 years. But
then let me ask you a second question to fine-tune that a bit. How close were they, in your personal knowledge, Steve, how close were they to a nuclear weapon?
None of us outside the CIA and the president can
exactly
answer that.
So let me ask you this. Who would know better whether Iran is a threat right now to the United States? The president of the United States. Steve, you haven't considered all the data. I'm going to give you some data. Who would know better, the president who's being briefed on a daily basis, or Joe Kent, who several months ago, for whatever reason, was cut out of those briefings and told you are no longer part of the presidential briefings? that he's getting from the CIA, NSA, DNI, and everybody else. So who knows better whether they are now a threat or, as of 2 weeks ago, were enough of a threat to justify an attack? Who knows better?
I'm happy to answer that. I'm happy to answer that. Joe Kent. Joe Kent.
How would he know if he wasn't part of the briefings?
To know that he knew enough that he didn't like what was going on with the Trump's administration and what he was doing.
He cannot like it, but Joe, but I'm asking you, Steve, if the president is being briefed, and I realize intelligence agencies have failed over the decades, I'm well aware of that. But given that you can only know what you're told, this is the information, and we've gone into situations before with bad information. But I'm asking you, if you're sitting there and you're the president of the United States, and the CIA and the NSA and everybody else comes in and says, let me finish, and they are this close to getting a weapon. And you know that Joe Kent does not, because Joe Kent was cut out of those briefings several months ago. You're telling me Joe Kent has better information than the president?
I believe he knows enough about how the president thinks, and that
this isn't about how the president thinks. This is about hold on, Steve. In a lot of ways, this is just like a cop who shows up in your town. And he sees a person who's currently presenting a threat. Does that cop have the authority to take that man's life?
Yep, this is exactly, okay. That's a great analogy, because Iran is like a black guy who happens to be in the wrong neighborhood. So
it doesn't matter what color. Why does it matter what color they are?
Because it's cultural. It's Iran. It's a culture that's very different than America.
Well, so is Saudi Arabia, but Saudi Arabia isn't rattling a saber once a week saying death to America. But I'm asking you, Steve, do we trust the cop?
The World Trade Center, do you remember 9/11?
Do we trust, yes, of course, I remember 9/11. But do we trust the cop? Oh, God. Steve, you know what? I know why you don't want me to ask the question, because you don't want to answer questions, do you?
Well, happy to answer, but you
okay, then tell me how Joe Kent knows better than the president of the United States, who's being briefed, and Joe Kent has been cut out of the briefings.
Joe Kent was a military man. He served. He knows what it's like. He's been in those meetings.
And all of that gives him better data about where Iran is with a weapon last week or 2 weeks ago?
You're going to try to corner me in to say yes, no.
No, I'm just asking you. If Joe Kent had 20 years in the military, that gives him a better knowledge of where Iran is today than the president of the United States had from all the vast, you know, intelligence apparatus that we have. Steve, good naysayer.
The Lars Larson Show. Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars. And now.
He is an existential threat to democracy.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. And one of the biggest boondoggles that we've been tracking literally for decades on this program is the new bridge over the Columbia River on Interstate 5. It was called the Columbia River Crossing. That whole project failed after a couple of $100 million had been spent. And now we've had a few $100 million that have been spent on what's called the IBR. And then we saw yesterday the governors of Oregon and Washington come together, I guess it was today, and they recommitted themselves to a project that they know they don't have the money to do. So I thought we'd get our favorite state representative on. Probably going to make Jim Walsh mad, but I'll say it's John Lee, who is Washington State Representative, District 18, Position 2. Representative Lee, welcome back.
Hey, Lars, thanks to be here. And as you said, they don't have enough money, even with all the nice sales pitch they talked about today.
No, and in fact, they have some federal money committed, which is going to evaporate here pretty soon, isn't it?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how they pull this out. But a little addition, I watched the press conference, and conspicuously absent was Governor Tina Kotek. So it was Bob Ferguson, it was people from ODOT and WSDOT, it was the transit agencies, the mayor of Vancouver. And bottom line, they are now going to, quote-unquote, phase this project. And the first phase, they said, was $7.65 billion. And then when they find the money, they'll talk about phase two. And, of course, phase one is building a new bridge and putting light rail on it. And, of course, as you and I have talked about many, many times, the whole purpose of this project is to build a light rail platform to bring light rail into Clark County that very few people in Clark County want.
And by the way, explain to my audience why they've decided to phase it, because when it was one big project just a couple of months ago, they were saying it's going to cost between $13 and $17 or $18 billion. Is that the reason they've said, oh, this is just phase one, we'll get to two and three and four later on?
Yeah, and so phase one, $7.65 billion, allegedly, and then what they didn't even address during the governor's press conference, but as we speak, the executive steering group is meeting, and as part of that presentation, they reveal that the total cost, allegedly, is $14.4 billion, and that is delivered at the 70th percentile of theoretically being accurate and able to deliver it, which, of course, if they ran it to the 100% or 90%, you're back to the $17, $18 billion number.
Okay, and they're saying that they will be hiring a contractor next year to start a project that's going to cost the better part of $8 billion, and they have $5 billion in hand right now, right?
Yes, and so construction is now delayed for 2 years. Construction will start in 2028. They'll hire the contractor next year. The alleged plan is about $5.9 billion to build the bridge and to put the light rail components on that bridge. But they are $450 million short of being able to pay for that $5.9 billion. And, of course, then they add the fluff of cost overruns and stuff to go from the 5.9 to the $7.65 billion. But bottom line is construction 2 years delayed. That's good for the people that are going to have to deal with that. The other good part of that is that the pre-construction tolling will not start until 2028, so there's another rabbit hole for us to run down there.
But that means they'll start tolling for a bridge that isn't going to be finished for how long, roughly?
And so they're saying 6 to 7 years in construction once they start. Wow. So theoretically 2036. And the total timeline remains 20 years. If they can find the money, which most likely will mean they will increase the amount they borrow paid back by tolling, and Oregon and Washington are both broke when it comes to being able to borrow more money from Wall Street, paid back by bonds and additional gas tax and car tab fees, etc. And so they don't know where they're going to find that, but if they get this thing started, they hope they can build a deep enough hole that then you just have to keep pouring money into it in order to finish this project.
Okay, and John, what happens when, because so far lately, the voters have had a very good track record of putting things on the ballot, and tolling is almost universally hated. They hate it in Seattle. They hate the idea in Portland. What are they going to do when they've based all this bonded debt on paying it back from the tolling money, and the voters say throw it on the ballot and vote the whole thing down? And then you've got bonds that still have to be paid back, except the source of the payback has just ceased to exist.
Yeah, and the short answer to that is if everything goes wrong for them, then the statewide taxpayers in both Oregon and Washington are going to have to cover those bonds, which puts the financial problems on all of the people of both Oregon and Washington, and that's horrible. It shouldn't happen. Let alone a different aspect of this reality is that Oregon, you know, had an impossible time trying to pass their $4.3 billion for a statewide transportation package here, and that's now on the ballot for Maine.
And it's going to get Washington, shot down big time, isn't it?
Yes, exactly right, exactly right. So that means Oregon's not going to have spare money for the inevitable cost overruns, let alone the shortage that is already admitted to on the IBR. And then Washington State, we've got an $8 billion obligation for funding our maintenance and preservation statewide. And so we don't need to be wasting enough money that should fund statewide projects all on a single project here in the IBR.
Unbelievable. I mean, all of this stuff is insane. I mean, they're gonna base ODOT on a tax that's gonna be voted down in May. Then they're gonna have another tax vote in November that has to do with $300 million from the Trump tax cuts. And then they've got tolling that they're hanging this project on that they almost know to a fair certainty is gonna be voted down by the voters. They'll put it on the ballot and they'll kill the thing. But you'll still be hung with the bill at the end of the day, won't you?
Yep, and we'll be stuck with a light rail project that carries almost nobody and an unbelievable IOU that people will be paying off for decades.
They're literally the single most expensive light rail line on planet Earth at over $1 billion per mile to build this stupid thing, and probably almost no help coming from the federal government, and they shouldn't get any help. That is John Lee. He's State Representative, District 18. John, thanks very much. Back in just a moment, we'll get to your phone calls and emails. And a teacher says she reported a suspected predator and got punished for it. We'll talk about that, too.
National, Lars has you covered. Call him from anywhere. 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I've got to tell you in a moment about a teacher who says she reported a suspected child predator, and then she got punished because she reported it. Let me get into the details of that in a moment. First, I want to go to a naysayer, because on this program, we always put naysayers first in line at 866-HEY-LARS. And on naysayers, 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. George, if you're a naysayer, we must disagree about something. What is it?
Yes. Well, I don't know if we disagree necessarily, but you're definitely on the other side of the issue. The executive order is not a way to amend the Constitution. I think we agree on that. And I think that's what Trump...
What are we talking about? Because you mentioned Amendment. The Constitution, but I'm not sure which issue you're on.
14th Amendment.
Oh, in terms of birthright citizenship?
Yes.
You don't need... Let me tell you why you don't need to amend the Constitution. The Constitution says very clearly, if you are born in America and subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, the folks who wrote the 14th Amendment did not throw in that extra phrase just to get more billable hours or because they decided it needed more words. It actually means something. It means that if you've come into... Hold on. It means that if your mom came into the United States legally and had you as a child, like Wong Kim Ark about 100 years ago, then you are an American citizen. On the other hand, if your mom came into the United States illegally and gave birth to you in America, you are not an American citizen. Now, Trump is not changing the Constitution with an executive order. But what he did was, he said, I'm no longer going to grant, because the reading of the 14th Amendment over the years, but has never been to court, was everybody born here is a citizen. And that is an incorrect reading. Trump wants the Supreme Court to consider that. So by telling people, if you came in illegally and then you had a child, your child is not an American citizen. He knew that would bring a lawsuit. It did. The Supreme Court agreed last December that they would hear the case. And that is a proper way to get the Supreme Court to read the 14th Amendment and say, this is what it means. for you to throw in the idea of an amendment, there is no amendment needed. The 14th Amendment was written perfectly well. It has been misinterpreted for close to 100 years.
Well, I don't think it's being misinterpreted. I think the children born to illegal aliens are both born here and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Therefore, they meet the full criteria.
What makes them or their mother subject to the jurisdiction thereof if she entered the country illegally?
Their mothers are subject to the jurisdiction thereof because everybody in the United States other than foreign diplomats are subject to the jurisdiction there.
No, if you come into the country illegally, here's the problem with your argument. Then what you're telling me is that for no reason whatsoever, the U.S. Supreme Court said this needs to be decided. And what you're saying is it's already right there. You don't need to hear this. Well, then why did the U.S. Supreme Court decide to hear the case?
Maybe we're dealing with an activist court.
I don't think it's an activist court. They're not rewriting the law. They're simply reading the 14th Amendment the way it should have been all along. Let me go to Ken. Hey, Ken, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I want to let you know I'm very hardcore. Believe in you 110%.
Thank you.
And I'm a President Trump follower no matter what. But I have a request. I want to know why you called Boko Haram, you don't call them Nigeria. You call Al-Shabaab, you don't call them Sudan. You call Al-Qaeda,
hold on,
you don't
hold
call
on.
Them
Ken, I don't know what you're talking about because you could have, hold on, Ken,
you don't
Ken,
call
Ken. I'm going to shut Ken up for a second. My producers would tell you I have talked about Nigeria 100 times on this show. I have talked about Sudan 100 times on this show. I don't know what Ken is talking about. Ken, where did you ever hear me? Where did you ever hear me refer to it as something other than Sudan?
Al-Shabaab. They should be Al-Shabaab, not Sudan. I want to see if you can leave Iran's name out of it and use Islamic Republic, which is a terrorist. Iran is not. Iran is 100% pro President Trump. They were, when I talked to my people back home, they're saying when he's going to attack, when it's going to happen. And I'm telling you, most of these people you see on the street, they're not Iranian. They're migrants from other countries.
Well, you may be right about that, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to call it Iran. I'm not going to call it the Islamic Republic of Iran. I mean, look, Mexico has a fancy long-handled name as well, and I don't see any point to going into that as well. I do want, while I've got time, to tell you about this school teacher. Her name is Marianne Baker, and she had been a special ed teacher for about 30 years in the Boise School District in Boise, Idaho. She has now been forced out of her job as a special ed teacher. And if you say, well, what horrible thing did Marianne Baker do? One of these days, I want to look forward to bringing her on the show, but I don't know the young lady. One of her paraprofessionals was a guy by the name of Gavin Snow. And Baker says that one of the rules in her classroom is nobody has a cell phone. We don't bring cell phones into the special education classroom. So she said she didn't like the way that phones distracted people from working with special needs children. So she started to get angry, and she was suspicious because she saw one of her paraprofessionals, teacher's assistants, Gavin Snow, who had his cell phone out. And she said she looked back on a weird interaction she saw. This guy, Snow, was exiting a bathroom with his phone in his hand, and a special needs student was still in the bathroom. That didn't initially strike her as weird, helping special needs kids go to the bathroom or change their diapers. That is part of the description. Well, she reported it, and she said, I think there's a problem here. I think we may have somebody who is either taking advantage of or committing a crime against some of the special needs kids. Guess what happened? They fired her. They forced her out of her job. And why did they force her out of her job? They said that she had failed to follow the mandatory reporting rules after she reported her suspicions that maybe this guy was a pedophile. Well, now the story is out there. She is now fighting to get her job back, and I think she ought to have her job back because There are few enough teachers already that even bothered to follow the mandatory reporting law. In this case, she did, and she's getting the punishment, and that makes no sense. Glad to get your calls in a moment. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.
Hey there, it's Lars.
Take a peek inside Lars's studio. Follow him on Instagram at The Lars Larson Show. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. You know that Idaho lawmakers right now are doubling down on a law that could send people to prison for helping minors get abortions across state lines. Should states have the power to criminalize that kind of thing? I'd say yes, they should be able to do that. Representative Russ Fulcher joins me now, who's a member of Congress for Idaho's first congressional district. Congressman, good to have you back.
Lars, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Do you mind talking about this? Because this is really an issue being decided by state lawmakers, not by the Congress, but I'd like to get your take on it, because I like the fact that Idaho is saying we're gonna put some protection up here so that kids can't be talked into leaving the state and going somewhere else to obtain an abortion.
Arthur, this was a big issue for me when I was a state senator, and it's a big issue for me in Congress. But the whole idea here is to reduce abortion, and that's what the legislature did. They put in this law that said, hey, if Roe versus Wade gets flipped, then Idaho is a non-abortion state. So apparently there is an issue with some of the language, the way they had that written, that as part of the explanation of it, it could constrict a physician or anyone from counseling a minor on the issue. And so that's what the current concern is over, was a language issue. And as far as I'm concerned, I think that the legislature is probably going to do the right thing. They're going to strike that one word, that recruiting word, out of the language and just move forward.
Well, and in fact, I could see that as well, because a doctor who's confronted by the case of a 15-year-old girl who's pregnant, she says, well, doctor, what should I do? If he says, well, we can make arrangements to have you travel to another state, a nearby state, and obtain an abortion there, that would be, I guess you could call that recruiting, and it might get into First Amendment territory, so take it out. The essence of the law is still there, isn't it?
That's exactly right, and once again, the idea here and the objective is to reduce abortions, and that's a very worthy objective as far as I'm concerned. And so but you don't want to get caught up with the speech issue. I agree that the recruiting word may be a problem. So what? Of course, a young lady needs counseling at that point. No, not a problem. And I think you just amend it and you move on.
Okay, Congressman, can I take you to another area? Just because in the last few hours, we found out that the top counterterrorism official in the United States who was working for the Trump administration, Joe Kent, has now decided to leave, and leave in a fairly, spectacular way. You know, he's announced his resignation, but then he sends out on social media a note that says President Trump's attack on Iran is completely wrong. It's not justified. And that, in fact, the president is being told what to do by Israel. And I don't take that kindly. And I have to tell you, Russ, I've had Joe Kent on this show literally dozens of times when he ran for Congress, and I tried to help him get elected. He then gets a job in the Trump administration, knowing what he knew about the president and about the world situation. He's got a great military background and a very courageous military background. What should we make of the top counterterrorism official leaving his job in the middle of the attacks on Iran? The hostilities are not over. In the middle of a DHS shutdown forced by the Democrats in Congress, your colleagues on the other side of the aisle. And just as we've seen three incidents of domestic terrorism on our own soil in the last 10 days.
Well, first of all, if you believe that Donald Trump is going to be moved or bullied into doing something by Netanyahu or anybody else on the planet, I think you're crazy, because you don't know Donald Trump if that's the case. Secondly, here's what we do know, Lars. We know that Iran has been terrorizing and killing Americans for 50 years.
Yep.
We know that their funding terror has Hamas all over the planet. You know that they just pick and they pick and they pick at creating death and discontent all over the place. And the fear, of course, is what if that they have used 100% of every weapon that they have ever created or obtained. And that's one of the statistics. And so if the worst weapon they get, you know they're actually going to use it. This president recognized it. He's known them as to be a bad actor. We all know that they're a bad actor. He's doing something about it. And frankly, I support him in that effort. But I also believe we need to get in and get out as quick as we can, get this job done. But I do support the president.
Well, and I saw the president in some comments today when he was asked about Joe Kent's departure. He said probably better that he's not there, that he seemed weak on security. I mean, some of these departures are really concerning, because the president wants people to come in and do a good job, but he's got to fill hundreds and hundreds of different positions. And if you only count the high-level positions, if you count all of them, it's literally thousands of positions that have to be filled. Was this just a bad hire?
You know, I'm not going to say that about Joe. I think I know who he is. I don't know him as well as you do, but on this issue, he signed on to work for the president, and he's working at his pleasure, and the president made his decisions based off of information that, frankly, I don't even have access to everything. And so, maybe it is better that he has moved on, but this job needs to be finished, and we need to get out. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm not disappointed that the Mr. Kent left.
Congressman Fulcher, the other thing I've been telling my audience is that my impression is the president thinks we're going to be out of there fairly soon. Is that yours as well? And if I'm completely off base, set me straight.
No, I think so. The one exception might be the Hormuz Strait and having some need to monitor that on an ongoing basis, because that's such a common commerce channel. But that's something that can and will be addressed, I believe, internationally. But in terms of the on-site, in-country stuff, I think we're going to be out soon.
Congressman Fulcher, what should we make of the fact that our so-called NATO allies didn't exactly jump up and say, we'll help you with the Hormuz Strait?
Well, let me tell you what, Lars, I can give you personal assurance that they're lining up outside my door, and I'm not kidding, to say, thank you, we're glad you did it, we're cheering you on, we're behind you, like way behind you, but they're behind us, okay? And so that's so typical, these Western European guys. I mean, I've seen it over and over and over again. They it's as long as it's our expense, at our risk, and they're all for it. It's when they have some skin in the game that they start getting weaselly about it. But
Congressman, it's like that friend who says, I'll hold your coat for you while you wade into the middle of the fight.
Yeah.
That is Congressman Russ Fulcher, who represents Idaho's 1st Congressional District. Congressman, thank you very much for the time. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson Show.